Hey, you guys. It's... What day is it? Tuesday.
I don't know. It's work day. Fucking worked and...
They're all work days.
Working and getting pissed off.
That's me every day.
Yeah. Fucking super frustrating today.
Well, you know, it happens. But,
We got the supplies in for the shirts. We had an order of fucking... four shirts, and I was gonna send Bees and S a free shirt because I got shirts going out to him anyway that I already made. Shot five shirts and fucking two of them failed. Losing money selling these shirts. Damn.
Yeah. And I don't know what's different. Like,
I don't know what yet.
Three of them turned out totally fine, and then the other two, like the ink just like washed right out.
Yeah, they looked good. And then I says I'm gonna wash these just to be sure. Washed them, and two of them failed.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know what changed. Everything was correct. The only thing I can think of is that I didn't have a whole lot of ink inside the screen when I was going through. I was trying to economize to make it easier and faster to clean. And that was the only thing that changed. The next time I'll make sure there's just plenty of ink in there. I figured as long as the image was on the shirt and it was cooked, it should work. Maybe it's got to penetrate through the fabric a little bit. Maybe there wasn't enough to penetrate through
the fabric. Yeah, I mean, honestly, I don't think I've ever had that problem before. So.
Yeah, I mean, the ones that I've made for myself, and then I never wash them when I ship them out.
Not usually.
But I made them for myself and then washed them, and they came out fine. I don't know if... I'm fucking scared that we've sold shirts and that they washed out on people. I don't know what happened. But, never heard back. Nobody ever said that it washed out. But
we've made a lot for ourselves, and we never had that happen, so...
Yeah. And we've done professional jobs where we fucking did 300 shirts. No, yeah. Probably the most would be about 150 we've done, huh?
No, we did like 80.
80? 80? Okay. Been a long time.
Willow Lee says, hello, I watch your cat. She's so cute. Yeah. She is very cute. I put up the video of her like sitting in the laundry pile today. Hey, Bethina. Hello from so long being here. Been recovering from a heart attack.
Oh, shit.
Holy shit. So happy to hear y'all. Oh, my God.
Defying the Grim Reaper and shit.
I mean, I'm glad you're feeling better. I hope you're feeling better. Holy shit, that's terrible. Yeah. But we're glad you're here. We're glad you're back. But, yeah. So, the movie we're talking about today is Die, Monster, Die.
It was a great movie. It's a great movie.
Not for everybody, but I don't know. I quite enjoyed it.
Boris Karloff was in it. And it's an old British movie. And it's a retelling of a H.P. Lovecraft story. Color out of space.
Yeah, like a loose adaptation.
But they're all loose. Even the movie
Not so much. I think the recent one, the 2019, was pretty close.
Pretty close. All right.
And there was one that came out in 1987 that was called The Curse. And that one was pretty close. And I think there were a couple like foreign ones. Like I think there was a German one that was like pretty close. So there have been some that are pretty close. There are actually more adaptations of Color Out of Space than I knew of until I started looking it up. And actually, I had heard the title of this movie, but I didn't realize until we were like scrolling through, because this is on Amazon Prime in the free to me section.
Free, yeah.
And I didn't even realize that this was an adaptation of The Color Out of Space until I read the little synopsis. And I was like, oh, interesting. We should probably watch that one. And, you know, Boris Karloff is in it, so win-win. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's a very loose adaptation. It's like, it's not very long. It's only like 79 minutes, something like that, I want to say.
That's good, though.
Like, parts of it are kind of slow. And it is like I don't know. It's kind of a lot different than the story. Like it kind of goes in a different direction. I would kind of want to talk about that a little bit, but I liked it though. To me, it reminded me more. It didn't remind me so much of like maybe an H.P. Lovecraft story. It reminded me more of like those Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe movies.
That's what I was gonna say. Fall of the House of Usher. It's kind of like that.
Well, the guy that directed it. This was actually his name's Daniel Haller. And this was his first, the movie that he directed, and he actually was he built the sets, or designed the sets for those Edgar Allan Poe movies.
Okay. Yeah.
So.
The quality's good. This is a good quality.
Yeah, there was a lot of, like, interior, I'm just watching the interior decorator porn, because I love those old,
was this
like,
1963?
65.
65. The special effects at the end were good for 65.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were kind of cool looking.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the idea that a damn dude was fucking doing experiments on an old meteorite that fell from fucking space, giving off damn radiation of some sort. They weren't sure what kind of radiation it was. an American guy involved in it and everything with a fake gangster accent. Was that his real accent?
Yeah, that's Nick Adams. He's American. He was in a shit ton of movies around this time period.
I didn't know if that was a British guy acting it.
No, I don't think he's British. I'm pretty sure he's American. Because I think he was in a lot of... He was in, like, a lot of 50s, 60s, like, sci-fi type movies, I have a feeling. And I think he was, like, in a lot of Roger Corman movies,
too. He had a real kind of stereotypical old school, like, Brooklyn-style fucking New York accent. It sounded like a damn gangster.
Well, what's interesting about this one is that I guess because they shot it in the UK, because I mean, obviously it's based on an H.P. Lovecraft story, and the H.P. Lovecraft story, you know, being set in the United States, presumably in Massachusetts somewhere. But this, they actually moved it to England. So it's like a town in England called Arkham, but then they have like the American character going over there. So. Basically, okay, so what happens in the movie, and I told Tom, because I said it's been a while since I read The Color Out of Space, so I said I'm going to reread it, like, before we do the show, so I can remember, like, all the shit that was different, because some of the stuff in the movie I was kind of like, oh yeah, that was kind of in the story, but some of the stuff I was like, yeah, I don't remember that, so, yeah, I mean, the movie's kind of a lot different.
Oh, before you go, why don't you do a plug?
Oh, right. So, remember the other day I said that I had put up a new... Because I have that new horror site. You guys know about that. Scare Salon. And I showed you, like, a shirt that I had made for that. And I also have a new true crime site, which is, like, a website which is a bunch of written content on it. And it's going to be a YouTube channel. There's only one video on there so far, but I'm putting another one Thursday.
Yeah, so go over there and subscribe to her new channels. You guys will like them.
Yeah, but I got this mug in the mail today that I made.
She made that. She's selling that, and it looks really good in person.
Yeah,
she designed that. Jenny is a professional graphic designer. Worked for all different kinds of companies and liquor industry people and club people and shit. But I saw that and I was like, man, that's pretty cool. She's like, yeah, I made that. That looks neat.
Yeah, I like how that
show
logo.
That again.
I like how that logo came out.
Yeah, how much is that?
I have no idea.
You don't know yet?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
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 That's pretty cool. Probably more to come, too.
Yeah, I've got other stuff on there, too, but you know what I mean. Let's see. Ooh, what are you doing? Somebody wants to update some shit, and I was like, you better not update some shit right now. But yeah, so what happens in this? So Nick Adams plays a guy, what's his name? Steven, right? Yeah, Steven Reinhardt. And he's an American dude. And he comes to England, to Arkham, to visit his girlfriend, I guess, Susan. Susan Whitley. And Susan Whitley lives out at this creepy old house that has all these gates, no trespassing, this means you, like bear traps around the outside. Like, they absolutely do not want people coming in there. And so he goes there to visit, but when he gets there, Boris Karloff, who is the dad, his name's Nahum, which is the same as the name. Although the weird thing about it is that the family in the story is they're the Gardner family. I don't know why they called them the Whitleys. And I was like, maybe they're making an homage to the Whately family from the Dunwich Horror.
Maybe.
So maybe that's what it is, because the mom in this is named Letitia. And in Dunwich Horror, I think the woman's name was Lavinia Whately.
Yeah.
So maybe that's kind of like, I mean, it's not the same, but maybe that's what they're homaging.
Yeah,
I'm not really sure. But it just seemed weird that they, because in the story, they're the Gardner family.
They're just trying to sound more Lovecraftian,
I guess.
Yeah.
Oscar says, watch Nope. It's easily Jordan Peele's best film. Yeah, I've been wanting to see that, actually. I remember, I think like you recommended that yesterday. Yeah. I need to see that pretty soon.
I liked most of the shit that I've seen from it.
Yeah, because it looks pretty cool. You'd probably like Get Out too, actually. But
I don't quite understand it, but a lot of the shit that he does. Because
you haven't
weird.
Seen Get Out, have you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I saw it. It was really good. But so he goes there to visit his girlfriend. Boris Karloff is there looking all sinister in his wheelchair. And he's basically like, the fuck you doing here? And he said, met your daughter at the university. They were both at presumably Miskatonic University in the U.S. They don't say that in the movie, but that's what I presumed. So they met, and apparently they are going to run off together or something like that. So she's like, well, you know, she said to come visit. And he's like, yeah, no, you get the right, this is my house, get the fuck out of here. Because he just, like, basically wandered in, like, when nobody answered the door, right? So he's like, well, I can't tell you why, but you don't belong here. Get the fuck out. And before he even gets there, like when he's in the town, everybody in the town, when he says where he's going, everybody's like, fuck you, or you're not going up there. And they wouldn't even, like, no one will even take him. The dude wouldn't even rent him a bike to go up to the house. He's going to walk all the way. I don't know how far it is. But so, like, he walks across, and there's, like, the blasted heath and all that, just, like, from the story. But, yeah, so he gets to the house, and Boris Karloff says, get the fuck out. And then, like, then the girl, like, comes down, Susan, and she's like, oh, Steven, you're here, blah, blah, blah. And Boris is like, okay, well, shit, I suppose so. This is, like, I don't even have any control over me in my own house. So there's that. Now, the daughter then takes her, takes Steven up to see her mom, who is, like, in her sick bed. And you can't really see her. She's just, like, behind all these bed curtains and all this other kind of crap. And basically, she says to Steven, I need you to get my daughter the fuck out of here because some bad shit's going on. And then she tells this story about this maid that she had who disappeared. Like, she started getting some kind of illness and then disappeared, and they don't know what the hell happened to her. So there was that. So the thing about it is that if you know what the short story is, like, I don't have to say spoiler alert because it's a very, very old story, and I feel like a lot of people have read it. If you already know, like, it's a meteorite that's causing, like, all these weird, like, mutations and stuff.
It's a satanic meteorite.
Well, that's not in the story, though, which is, like, that was another thing. Because in the movie, yeah, it has kind of, like, more of a black magic connotation, which, like I said, it's not, they didn't completely pull that out of their ass.
I like this version.
Yeah, because that is kind of more in line with some of Lovecraft's other stuff.
Yeah.
But
like
that's
elder gods and things, yeah, from that don't care about you in the universe, the things, gods that hate you. I fucking love that shit. I like this movie's take on the fucking color out of space. Around the damn thing where he's got it, he's got fucking Baphomet and fucking devils and demon paintings of it and shit. Satanic symbols and stuff. I just liked it. You know, it looked good.
Yeah, I liked that too. I'm just saying that it's not exactly like the story.
No.
Like, they do have the thing about the meteorite and the weird color. It's kind of like green in this case. They don't really go too much into the color being like a color that you can't describe or like something that...
It's just rainbow prismatic.
Yeah, but it's just like this like, yeah, weird green light that like glows and stuff.
I thought they did a good job with the limited budget and the limited technology of the time. I thought they did a good job of creeping you out about something that fell from space, some kind of evil meteor.
Yeah, and
that can mutate life forms and fucking bring evil shit and do stuff and possess you and make monsters, make people into monsters. I just thought it was a cool idea. But that's basically kind of what Color Out of Space was about.
Yeah.
Basically what happened.
I'm just saying they did change some shit around. Because in this, like I said, in the story, the character, the narrator, is never named. And he just goes out to wherever this is as a surveyor. Which they actually did that in the Nicolas Cage version. Where they sent, like, the surveyor out. But in the story, he's, like, a surveyor from Boston, and he's supposed to go up there, and the whole thing about, like, you know, the blasted heath, there's, like, all this stuff, it's, like, it looks like a fire, but not exactly. Like, nothing grows there. Everything's gray and ashy and shit, and they can't figure out what's the matter. And he goes there, and then there's all kind of, like, weird rumors about some strange shit that's going on, like, out at this farm and, like, with this kind of thing that fell from the sky. And the narrator in the story, I don't think he ever actually goes there. Like, he gets to the town, and then, like, he talks to this guy, I think his name is Amy Pierce, and he's supposed to be crazy, but he's the one that tells him the whole story about the Gardner family and how this thing fell out of the sky and, like, all this crazy shit started growing, and then everybody started going, like, insane and mutating and shit like that. And so the narrator of the story never actually goes there. He just, like, hears this story, and he's like, nope, I'm out. And he, like, goes right... he just quits his job and goes back to Boston.
Yeah, well, that's Lovecraft, though. Lovecraft, he's not really... Story is not so much about narrative and story. It's more about atmosphere and fucking
part
of the shit. That's kind of the good part about Lovecraft and the frustrating part of Lovecraft. The only story I read from Lovecraft that I remember being kind of like a coherent story that was modern would have been In the Mountains of Madness. That one I remember being pretty... like a narrative-based story. But But it had a lot of weird aspects to it, too. It sounds older than it really is. And then a bunch of little tales, collections that I read when I was a kid. I don't even remember them all. They're just more atmospheric, and they're not very long.
Yeah, a lot of them are super short.
They're short, and nothing really happens in them, per se. You're being told something. You know, that's yeah. You have to read it to describe it. It's atmosphere more than anything else.
I was always kind of partial to Pikmin's model.
Yeah,
I don't know why I like that one so much. I just do.
But what he's doing is he's trying to trick your imagination into running wild. It does. You know what I mean? So I think that's why Lovecraft is memorable, is because half the story is your imagination filling in gaps.
Yeah, it's implication. Like the implications of it are horrific.
Right. And so what that means is that whenever they make a movie based on a Lovecraft story, the movies can be wildly different from one another, but they still kind of inspired by the story, because when you read the story, a lot of it's open to your interpretations.
Well,
you're filling in gaps because there's a lot of gaps in the story.
I mean, look at the movie from 2018, Annihilation, which was not a direct adaptation of The Color Out of Space, but I would argue that it has a lot of similarities with The Color Out of Space.
But I don't remember everything about Lovecraft that I've read. It was a long time ago when I read it. But I was under the impression, or I do remember saying, yeah, this right here is where that movie came from. And it's kind of like, it's like you can't really make a movie just verbatim from that story. You have to fucking, it's implying shit, so you have to make a story out of this. But you have to read it to understand what I'm talking about. Jenny could probably understand it better than I can, because she's a writer. She can explain it better than I can. There's not enough there for a movie. It's not visual. It's all literal. It's literature. So you're having to fill in a bunch of gaps. Like a Bible story. There's a lot missing. You can get a feel for what something happened in Jam Genesis, but it doesn't verbatim tell you what happened. You know? You'd have to... I don't know. I'm letting my mouth run too much.
What else?
She's not really helping
what
me.
What else is there?
You're not really helping me.
Well, because you never give me a gap to, like, come in.
No,
you just,
I'm waiting.
You just keep on talking.
Okay, I'm waiting.
No, I'm just saying that I think that's why, like, adaptations of Lovecraft films are, you know, very hit and miss.
Yeah.
There's not as... I mean, considering, like, how big of a cultural influence Lovecraft has been... there's not really as many adaptations of his work as you would think, but I think that's probably why, because his stuff is just so hard to get a handle on.
Yeah.
It's very slippery, and it doesn't really, like I said, it's, a lot of it is internal, a lot of it is based on your interpretation, your imagination, and so, like, it's hard to get it on screen, because a lot of the stuff that he puts in the story is not really described, because
visual
it's, like,
terms,
because it's too horrible to be described. Like, if the whole, like, Lovecraftian ethos was...
Yeah.
You know, there are some things that mankind, like, if you just see a glimpse of it, it will drive you insane because it'll break your brain. And so showing that visually
is
not
going
to work.
It'd be like trying to make a movie based on a poem. It'd be real hard, you know.
Yeah. Camp Guy said they're trying to develop a Hollywood movie from Mountains of Madness. Yeah,
I've been trying that.
Guillermo del Toro has been wanting to do that forever, and I would love to see that, actually, because he's a huge, huge Lovecraft fan. But it just, I don't know. It just seems like, I don't know if it's ever going to happen. Because if you're going to do it, like, they need to do it right.
The closest movie to Mountain of Madness is Alien versus Predator. That's real close. They go up to the North Pole, they find an ancient city, old ones and aliens, Shaggoths and fucking old ones fucking kill people. That's kind of like Alien versus Predator. That's kind of what happens in that movie.
Willow asked if we had seen Dagon. Yeah, we talked about that, I think, like, the other night, like, on the sidetrack. Yeah, we were just talking about, actually, that's one of my favorite Lovecraft adaptations.
Yep.
Because it's so, even though it's like I said, it's called Dagon, even though it's actually an adaptation of Shadow over Innsmouth, but
still good though.
It's still good, and honestly, like I said, it's very, very slippery and fishy, and it's like that kind of like gave me the vibe that I got when I was reading a lot of Lovecraft stories.
Lovecraft would have liked that, I think.
He
would have liked that one.
I think he probably would have.
Yeah.
But the thing about this one is that the story goes, and I'm not really sure, because I kind of feel like the 2019 Color Out of Space was a lot closer to the story than this one was. This one, like I said, the guy that came there was like a suitor, I guess, or the boyfriend of the daughter. In the story, the original story, the family didn't have a daughter. I think they actually had three sons, and all of the sons went crazy. Now, interestingly, one of the sons was named Mervin, and in this movie, they made Mervin like a like an old manservant. He was kind of like, what is it, like Boris Karloff's like valet or butler or something like that? Yeah. He was the guy that like helped him out and like pushed his wheelchair around and stuff.
His assistant.
And then like he ended up dying. And like I said, I think too that in the original story, you know, Nahum and you know, the wife, I don't even know if they gave the wife a first name. She was just Mrs. Gardner. And I can't remember if they gave her a first name or not. But, you know, the meteorite fell and like all this stuff started growing. And then it started mutating all the plants and mutating all the animals. And then they discovered that, yeah, these big honking tomatoes, but you couldn't eat them. Like, everything was inedible. And then everything started, like, turning to ash and gray. And, like, it was, you know, it just, like, fucked up all the lands. You couldn't grow anything else on it. And then the color started making everybody crazy and, like, causing all of these. Like, the whole family was going crazy, like, one at a time because they were drinking the well water. Like I said, they went more into that in the Richard Stanley version, like that they made in 2019 with Nicolas Cage. This one didn't really go into that. And the weird thing about this is that they actually, like, because I guess they wanted to add like a generational black magic aspect to it, like some of Lovecraft's other stories, they actually like took this one back a generation so that the Boris Karloff character, Nahum, he was alive when the meteor fell, but it was actually his dad, Corbin, who, I guess, like, the meteor fell and all of this stuff started growing and Corbin was like, woohoo, like, you know, that's going to be super awesome, like, for the area. And so they kind of, like, implied that he started, like, talking to some dark forces, like, that came with the meteor or something. Like I said, they tried to, like, tie together the whole elder gods and meteor thing, whereas the original story, The Color Out of Space, was just more a straight up sci-fi story about a meteor that fell and it had like a weird globule inside of it that was like a color that mutated everything and made people go crazy and made them turn into like melty-faced like freaks and stuff like that. So the movie has that aspect to it, but then they tried to like tie in the whole thing about you know, Boris Karloff and saying, oh, my father Corbin like was talking to dark forces and he had the meteorite like in this. It's not even, like, I think in the story it was in a well, but, like, in the movie, it's, like, in this, it's kind of like a well, I guess. It's, like, down in the cellar, but it's, like, this box that has kind of this lattice work, like, over it.
It was, like, in a tomb.
Yeah, like a tomb kind of situation. Yeah.
You put it, like, in a tomb thing.
But, so it's kind of got that. And you're led to assume that the maid that disappeared, she kind of turns up now and again, and she's got veils on, and she's gone crazy, and, like, her face is all fucked
looks
up.
Looks like fucking Anna Varney Contoda and shit.
Yeah. For fucking and then also the mom, Letitia, yeah. Who, I think in the original story, like, he locks her, like, she starts going nuts and, like, looking all weird and stuff, so he, like, locks her in the attic. In the movie, she's not locked anywhere, she's just, like, confined to her bed, I guess, and she doesn't want anybody to see her. So, over the course of the movie, she seems, like, kind of normal at the beginning, even though you can't really see what she looks like, but then, like, later on, she mutates and, like, flips out and trashes the place like Keith Moon, and then, like, she fucking runs out and her face is all like fucking lumpy and fucked up too. And then, so at the end, well, I actually kind of like the effect that they did at the end where Boris Karloff, because they try to tell him, they're like, you know, Nick Adams' character, Steven, he's just like, look, this meteor is like, has fucked up all, he's like, you know, it killed your maid, it killed your wife, you know, it killed Mervin, the manservant guy, and it's, you know, it, you've got all these mutated, because he found, like, all the mutated plants and animals, like, in the greenhouse, because he saw, like, this weird glow coming out of it, so he found all that, and he's like, look, you really need to get the fuck out of here, because, you know, it's gonna do the same thing to you, and he's just like, no, it'll all be fine, and it's just a rock, it's harmless, and he's like, yeah, you don't really believe that, what the fuck ever, but then, like, toward the end, like, Boris Karloff, he gets... he kind of like falls on the meteor, sort of. Like, he's fighting with the maid who has come back to kill him, like, with the veil dead. And then she ends up, it looks like it's edited kind of weird, but, like, she falls on the meteor, right, and, like, disintegrates,
I want to say. She kind of blows up.
And then it kind of blows up.
You just got to, just, you know, this is Lovecraftian cosmic horror and shit. Just shit happens. You just accept it. She falls on the meteor and goes, poof, and big old fucking beams of energy come out, and there's, like, smoldering ruins and parts of her clothes underneath there. And then Boris Karloff somehow kind of falls in with her, and he comes out glowing and fucking prismatic.
Yeah, he looks all...
Turns into a damn monster.
He looks all, like, silver.
Yeah. Like he looks cool.
Well, I think it's cool. With and then, like, there's a green glow, like,
yeah, and all his hair is burned off, and his face gets all fucking silver and stretched out. And I looked at it and says, oh, fucking Lovecraft. The mask that they had on him looked just like H.P. Lovecraft. So he's like a glowing H.P. Lovecraft.
Lumbering around
trying to kill him. But he looked just like fucking Lovecraft. Did you notice that?
He kind of did.
To me, he looked... I think he was...
His ears were sticking way out.
I think they were trying to say that was the damn Lovecraft mask.
And the thing about it is that I don't know if that was actually Boris Karloff, like, under that. Yeah, I think it might have been a stunt man.
Yeah. But the mask looked like a mask of fuck, like a cheap mask of fucking H.P. Lovecraft.
It did kind
of.
It reminded me of somebody else. But
I think they were homaging him.
But I couldn't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I think they were homaging him. And somebody in the comment section says, man, who was that that said, Ken X says, if In the Mountains of Madness is like AVP1, I got to check it out. Well, there's no movie yet. You have to read the book. But no, it is kind of like it. Explorers go to Antarctica in the book, I think. Isn't it Antarctica? It's the South Pole.
I think so, yeah.
They go to Antarctica and find an alien city there. And most of the city's huge, and the alien city has a lot of fucking glyphs and statues. And they're doing a study, and it kind of tells the travel of these aliens across the universe and the shit that they did. And them arriving here actually started, like, life on the planet, I think. And humans evolved from their waste products and shit that contaminated the planet. And they kept humans as pets, and they did all kinds of stuff. And then a big war broke out between the old ones. They look like footballs with tentacles on the bottom of them and a starfish on the top with a mouth on it and eyes and big space wings. They could fly. They didn't need ships. They could just go through space. They were called the old ones. And they just like can drift through space forever in suspended animation. They could sleep. And they were real intelligent scientists and stuff. But they had this race of beings that they kept as slaves that helped them build their city, and they were called Shaggoths. The Shaggoths were basically what you saw out of The Thing. They were like a big amoeba that could swallow things up and copy creatures and shit. And that's why Carpenter said that it was kind of that the thing is kind of Lovecraftian. And that's a Shaggoth from H.P. Lovecraft. Same basic story. Big old amoeba that could swallow you and cop. Well, the Shaggoth swallowed a damn old one and got the information for a brain, and they became intelligent and spread and shared the brain technology between each other, and they overthrew the old ones. And then it turns out the explorers find out that there's Shaggoths still running around, and old ones running around in there. They woke them up. There's dinosaurs in there, dinosaur carcasses and shit. But it was kind of like AVP1 and The Thing mixed it together, kind of. It would make a real good movie. But like somebody mentioned, this is in that story, a lot of the story is them describing what was on the walls.
Yeah.
Yeah, the glyphs and shit. Because it's a huge city with fucking buildings and statues and statues of the gods, and then statues that show the history of the old ones and how they went across space and all the fucking planets that they conquered and shit. And it would trip you out back in the day reading that. It was a story was ahead of its time. Lovecraft was a genius. You know, he was a genius. He was weird, but hey.
Well, sometimes
you got to be weird to be the kind of genius he was.
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day.
Yeah.
How I don't think his stories would have been as impactful if he had been a normal well-adjusted person.
Because some people said, "Well, we shouldn't read him. He was racist." He was a lot of things. Yeah, he was racist against other white people. But that's what made him weird. All right, he was a man filled with fear. He was tall. He was just kind of a bashful, shy person without much exposure to the outside world. And when you read his writing, he's very intelligent. He's very introspective. He's very kind of paranoid and fear-filled and worried that the gods don't care about you, that the gods hate you, which that's way ahead of his time, you know what I mean? People didn't write like that. That was like satanic thinking, you know, back in those days.
Yeah. But the thing about this movie, I was watching a couple of other reviews of it. Like I said, keep in mind that it's not a real accurate... it does have a lot of similarities with Color Out of Space, the story, but it's not exactly like it. They changed a lot of stuff. Like I said, it's a little bit slow. The weird thing, I was watching this one. I liked this movie, actually. I liked it a lot. But I saw one guy that said, he's like, the weird thing about this movie is that it's like too slow and also too fast. He's like, what I mean by that is that there's a lot of scenes where it's just somebody like creeping around the house and nothing really happens. He's like, but then it's like only 79 minutes long. And sometimes Nick Adams, who's like the main like investigator character, you know, because he comes there and he's trying to like get the girlfriend out of there. Like he makes these really big like leaps of logic that you wouldn't necessarily make. Like he figures everything out without a lot of evidence. You know what I'm saying?
It was just made for an audience of the time.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like maybe there was a few other scenes that were maybe trimmed out. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's like, you know what I mean? Like he goes to the greenhouse, like it's glowing. And then he finds like little pieces of this meteorite, like planted underneath two of the plants. And he's like, oh, it's under all the plants. And I was just like, well, you know, I guess maybe you can assume that, but it just seemed like, I mean, he figured everything out like super quick, but you know, it's whatever. I don't know. Like I said, I really liked it. There was just some kind of, it's very much in the, it's not, you know, Roger Corman. It is in American International Pictures, though. So it does have a lot of that vibe that the Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe series of movies had. I don't think it's quite as good as those, but I liked it. I don't know. There was just something about it that was like, that I really liked, I guess. And I, you know, it's funny because I'd never heard of it. I knew that there had been other adaptations of Color Out of Space, but I didn't realize there had been so many. Like I said, I looked it up, and there was this one. This, I think, was the first one. And there was one I mentioned earlier that was called, and I kind of have to see this now, yeah. But there's one called The Curse from 1987, which is supposedly pretty close to the actual story. Will Wheaton is in that, and Claude Akins and John Schneider. And I'm like, John Schneider from Dukes of Hazzard? Okay, I gotta see that. But yeah, 87. And then there was one, although they set it in the 80s, so it's like set in contemporary times, which I'm not sure I love that, but I kind of want to see it anyway. There was another movie that came out in 2008 called Color from the Dark, and that was set in Italy, so that was like an adaptation. And then there was one that came out in 2010 that's called Defarb, the color. That was a German one. And that's supposed to be pretty accurate, too. And like I said, the movie Annihilation, while not a direct adaptation, is actually like shares a lot of plot points with the story. Well, not so much plot points, but just the fact that like something came from space and it's colorful and it immediately mutates everything, like plants and animals. So it has that kind of like thing to it, but it doesn't have all the thing about like the family and everybody going crazy and their faces melting off and all that other kind of stuff. But that is in this movie. So I don't know. I feel like this was maybe one of Boris Karloff's last movies.
He's getting pretty old in this.
He's pretty old in this.
Yeah.
What, I can't remember.
He still did a good job though. They cast him right. He was supposed to be an old man. So.
Yeah. And he's like going around and he's super sinister.
Creeping on people while they're in bed and shit. Rolling up on them in a damn wheelchair and fucking doing shit behind their backs. He's like, you creepy old man. You need to get your ass whipped. Doing that.
That's right. He was going to kill. Yeah. He was thinking about killing that because he kind of like, he went in there and he was going to like looking at the kid was a candlestick, right?
Yeah,
and he's just like, I can dump that dude on his.
Yeah.
But then like the guy was awake though and he's like,
overall, I thought it was a good Lovecraft based movie. You could feel that there was some Lovecraft shit going on in it. It's a movie of its time. But they did a good job of the special effects. And when it starts going towards the end part, for the time, the special effects were good. They didn't spend much money on movies back then. You know, they were kind of like a play, something that you would see in a damn theater.
Well, especially horror and sci-fi.
Especially horror sci-fi. So you were lucky to get what you got. So I could, back in the 60s, I think people would have enjoyed this.
Yeah. And like I said, I liked it too. I mean, yeah. Boris Karloff is always worth watching.
Yeah.
I really liked like all the weird green light, and I really, yeah. I honestly really kind of liked, I mean, yeah, it looks kind of cheesy by today's standards, but I really kind of liked the end scene where he finally gets taken over by the meteor, and then like he's all silver and it's just.
Yeah, the end part where you start getting to the Lovecraftian shit, the way it's filmed and everything, you can tell that it's British because it feels very much like one of the old Sinbad movies. It looks like Sinbad and the Eye of the Tiger, or Sinbad and the Seven Voyages of Sinbad, like that, which I think, which is good. It's a good classic way of doing special effects. It's not stop motion, but the sets and the lighting and, you know, the satanic imagery and shit, I thought it was cool.
Yeah, with all the, because, yeah, like I said, that's not in the original story, but I kind of like that they sort of added it, because I guess they were trying to, like, tie it into the larger Lovecraft mythos, I suppose.
Yeah, they were just trying to give it a creepy look.
You know what's interesting about this is that, you know, on Amazon Prime, because like I said, this is a, if you have Amazon Prime, this is on free to me. They also have on there, they also have The Haunted Palace, which is a Roger Corman movie with Vincent Price in it. And that was a double feature with this because The Haunted Palace is also a Lovecraft adaptation. So now I'm kind of like, I've been wanting to watch that anyway, but I didn't realize. I was like, oh yeah, that is a Lovecraft adaptation, isn't it? So maybe we should watch that one someday too.
The end of this also kind of had a Lovecraft vibe to it. The evil dude is destroyed. The meteor fucking destroys him. The entire house, the guy and the girl, the investigator, and he does save the fucking pretty girl, and they fucking got out of there, and they're standing outside the house watching it all fucking burn up in this fucking fire that created by this fucking prismatic color that you couldn't see. And I guess, well, she was like, well, I guess this was his destiny, and fucking how the curse and shit, you know, blah, 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 blah. And the dude fucking comes out with some cool fucking Lovecraftian type shit. He goes, no, it didn't have to be this way. This could have been a great fucking, you know, scientific discovery. But he chose to fucking play
it
this way.
He fucked it up.
He fucked it up. It didn't have to go down this way.
That's not what he said. That's what
basically,
I said.
Basically. But, you know, which I was like, when he said that, I was like, yeah, that is kind of something you'd read in a fucking Lovecraft book. All this bad shit happened, but it was on them. It didn't have to go down that way. It was their fault. they could have done something good with that stone.
You tampered in God's domain.
Right, right. That could have been a great fucking discovery, and now it's gone. Dumbasses. You know what I mean?
Although I kind of feel like Lovecraft, afraid of everything as he was.
Sometimes he'd say, oh, let it lie.
I kind of feel like he'd be more inclined to say, like, yeah, mankind shouldn't
be fucking
with that because that's going to go horribly wrong.
Right.
He seemed like very anti-progress to
me. Well, it could have been either way. He could have characters that would say that, but then there'd be an overarching thing of dread where, like, no, he's wrong about that.
Because his whole thing was kind of like, oh, you know, man thirsts after forbidden knowledge, but it always bites you in the ass.
Right.
So I kind of feel like that was like the overarching theme of a lot of his story.
That's probably what the movie meant, is that that investigator fucking, because remember, he was saying, oh, this is radiation, just causing these animals to mutate. But what's implied by the story overall is that it's not radiation, that it's an evil force. It's an evil living force that's satanic. Or at least the dude thought it was satanic. He was putting all that satanic symbolism all about it. But it was evil and it was from another planet.
Yeah.
Or another place.
So probably it shouldn't have been fucked.
Shouldn't have been fucked with.
Because it was wiping some shit out. It was, you know, it was probably like decimate the earth kind of shit. You know what I mean? All right. So are we done talking about it?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So... So tomorrow is our main show. And this should be a good one. It's about the Terracotta Army.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that tomb and everything, right?
Yeah,
that's around. Okay, yeah, that tomb I think is a lot more. I mean, those soldiers are quite impressive, but the tomb, complex itself is fucking...
Yeah, we'll talk about the emperor that had it built.
And I don't know if they made any progress on looking inside that tomb. Do you...
I haven't had time,
time to look at that yet?
To do any research yet. I got to start back doing
that.
I think first
it was back in the
morning.
Late 80s, they tried to send a damn camera down in there and take a picture of it. But they were afraid of allowing oxygen in there. Man, the Chinese government won't let anybody go into the tomb. They know it's there. I sure would like to see it.
Hugo said, have you seen the 2005 Call of Cthulhu movie, and did you like it?
I don't know which one you're talking about. There's a lot of Cthulhu.
Was a Call of Cthulhu. Didn't the H.P. Lovecraft Appreciation Society make a Call of Cthulhu that was like an old black and white one that looked like a silent movie?
Yeah, that one was excellent.
I really liked that one a lot.
If he's talking about that one, then yeah, that was a good one.
But I don't know if
it
was
black
the same
and white.
One.
It was kind of like King Kong. It was a silent movie. It had music playing, but you know, there was no.
Yeah, they made it look like an old silent movie.
Yeah, and then fucking Cthulhu comes out, and it's like it's a claymation creature. It's claymation. It's all stop motion. I thought that looked great. It looked like something from Lovecraft's time.
Yeah, see, which to me, I don't know. Like, yeah, you can do modernized versions of it, but I don't know. It's just not the same. I always kind of like associate Lovecraft stories with that time period.
Yeah,
that
early
1900s.
Yeah.
Like around the 1920s. So it's just kind of like, to me, they seem more Lovecraftian. Yeah. If they're made back in that time period.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. All right, so be sure to drop by tomorrow evening for our main show, which should be a lot of fun. Thanks for dropping by today, and we will see you guys again tomorrow. Bye.